Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Absolutely open the floodgates of just another storm of portal guys leaving because nobody will honor the money that they promised.
Yeah, this could be a really big thing, or it could be a nothing burger. And I think if we weren't going to have a change in the White House in a number of days here, I would be reacting to this news a little bit more strongly than I am, because, you know, once you get the administration change, is the verdict on this going to be the same for, you know, I'm no political guru, so I will leave that to the experts on the Hill. But I do kind of wonder if this is sort of, kind of a meaningless announcement from an outgoing president when his successor is from the opposite political party and may not necessarily share his, this administration's opinions on how that revenue should be shared. You know, should it be seen as, financial aid distributed equally as the announcement was this week, or should it be viewed as it's distributed in proportion to the revenue that that teams generate for the athletic department, in which case, you know, that would reflect much of that money going to male athletes. So I think as your expert said there, let's revisit this in a couple weeks, and really the change in the White House occurs in a matter of days here, and so we'll see what direction this goes. I don't know that this is going to hold.
All right, and your official take is you're taking Ohio State on Monday.
I'm taking Ohio State to win. I'm taking Ohio State to cover. I don't think it'll be an absolute blowout, because I think Notre Dame's defense can keep it semi-competitive, but Ohio State by about like 10 to 14 kind of feels about right.
All right, buddy, have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national columnist for USA Today Sports. When we come back, let's get into the list. We'll get Tim's thoughts on the national championship game. Got some news on Tom Brady's future. Also, a few other notes around the NFL as we get ready for divisional weekend. We'll talk about that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Zen Sports just picked another grand prize winner, this time for the big game in December. And now they're rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January, and the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game in February and $10,000 cash, or you can take an alternative payout of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still have a shot to win one of five small prizes, which will grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for all new customers who sign up using my referral code JeffTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive 500 additional entries to the entries earned on the value of your qualifying bet. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of terms and conditions. You can also earn a $100 no-danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. For a gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Eric Hastein going to join us here in about 20 minutes. Grizzlies and Spurs tonight, national TV game. Grizzlies on ESPN at 8:30. Eric will have the radio call right here on 92.9 FM ESPN at 8:30. But before we do that, let's get into the list. The Memphis Tigers. All right, Tim, you and I were talking about this before the show, that you thought last night was going to be a tough spot for the Tigers. Heading on the road to Temple, they end up getting knocked off 88-81, taking their first conference loss. However, because of Temple's resume, they've now been a quad two team. So that's a quad two loss. This isn't the type of devastating loss to your resume that some of perhaps the other AAC games would be. What struck you about it? Because the only thing that kind of made me a little bit hesitant about it is that Memphis has been very good on the road. They've been kind of game on the road, yet some of the sleepier atmospheres have at home have been kind of where they've been a little bit vulnerable, but you thought that was a good spot.
Yeah, I did. I mean, look, I was kicking myself all last night on VSiN because I didn't actually bet the game. The betting market, by the way, for those wondering, opened, I think, 9 in favor of the Tigers, went down to 7, and then, you know, Temple got the outright victory. It did feel like at the end of the first half, I think it was like a, was it Danger in the paint? One of the they had like a hook shot at before the end of the half.
Danger, yes, because Cisse doesn't really do a lot of offense.
Yeah, so that cut the deficit down to 6, and I think it was like a pick'em pretty much from that point heading into the second half. I was like, I wonder, you know, if this is a spot where Memphis is going to kind of turn on the Jets. But you mentioned sleepy atmospheres. Well, let's look at Memphis and where they've been on the road.
Yep.
All right, they went to UNLV. That's kind of sleepy. They got a win. They did not cover that game, worth noting. They go out to the Bay Area before, you know, going out to Maui.
Yeah, the Chase Maui Center.
Maui's an awesome atmosphere, as we saw, and those were some of the best games they played. You go to an ACC atmosphere in Clemson, which was a spot that I think you and I liked, which I think the early start time, remind me, that was a 10 a.m. Central game?
10 a.m. Central, also students at Clemson were out of school, and so they I think that was the game following their big Kentucky win.
And that kind of played into the hands of Memphis,
yeah,
in the sense that like you kind of caught Clemson in this sleepy spot. So I think what I was worried about with Memphis, and I've said this for a while on my show, and I've probably mentioned it here, I really like this team. I think they have a chance to make a run. They've got great guard play. How good is your good? Well, their good's pretty darn good because they beat Michigan State. They beat UConn. Michigan State, oh, by the way, has lost a total of 0 games since losing to Memphis out in Maui. So we know what the ceiling can be. Unfortunately, they're college kids. You're traveling to Philadelphia. It's not going to be a great atmosphere. You've got a number by your name, and you're the wanted team in this conference right now, and you're going to get the best out of every single team that you face. So I do feel like maybe there's another slip up coming, but just looking at KenPom, Temple and UAB are the two best teams outside of Memphis, right?
Yep.
FAU, I guess, is not too far behind. Like this
North
was,
Texas, I think, is up there too.
These were the types of games that you could put. Yeah, no, actually, you're right. North Texas, who they already beat at home in a close one. These are the games that you could have some issues with, and hopefully for their sake. And I think Penny said it last night, remind me if I'm correct, he was like, I'm not worried, you know, and I don't think you should be. It's college basketball, it's a conference game, you're on the road, and, you know, it's unlike a massive conference, it's not going to be a raucous environment. I think that plays into your detriment, you know, playing a team like Temple.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting to watch about them going forward, they are not a particularly good rebounding team. And if you look at the conference numbers, Temple was the second best offensive rebounding team in the AAC. You've already, I think like that is the real question moving forward, is how many teams do they play that can exploit their rebounding deficiency? And I think they, obviously UAB with Laxelrod, the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Lindenborg, sorry. Tyler, or Yaxel Lindenborg. They'll obviously take advantage of that, but that's, I don't know, like to me, like that, there was kind of a, I'm not dismissing it, saying like, whatever, move on. But like, I just don't think that was a catastrophic loss. Like, if they're going and they're losing at UTSA, okay, we need to have a conversation. But Temple's a credible team.
Yeah, and once again, it's not a... I don't know, and I'm not a bracketologist. I don't think a loss at Temple is a seed bump.
No, because it's a quad two loss. It's not right. That bad.
Teams have quad two losses. They're going to happen. But you can't let this pile over, right?
Yeah, you can't have it spiral on you.
Turn around, smoke Charlotte on Sunday, beat Wichita at home. Look, next Sunday is going to be a hell of a showdown, I think, against UAB. That's going to be a tricky one. But they'll be a big favorite. They'll be at home. So you'll have to be buttoned up there. But you look at the schedule. Look, KenPom projects them to win every single game moving forward. And all of these games by, a decent margin. UAB on the road early March would be a six-point win. Outside of that, man, you're expected to win all of these games. So will they trip up again? Probably. But I still think Memphis is in decent shape to take care of business. And, when you've got guard play like they have and they can shoot the way that they do, I still believe that, obviously everything's matchup-based. I think they can make a run. I still believe they could have made a run 2 years ago. And, they let that game slip out of their fingertips against FAU. And I think with this guard play, I think they'll be fine moving forward.
All right, the national championship game. All right, Tim, Monday night, live in Atlanta. They will actually have the Chick-fil-A's open because it's on Monday.
I know. How about that?
They will have the Chick-fil-A's open, even though I think it's MLK Day. I'm pretty sure the Chick-fil-A will still be open at the stadium. I guess this is the question that I have. How much, I believe most people, and I think probably rightfully so, at the end of the day, they're an 8-point favorite. Most people believe this is going to be an Ohio State championship game. In the back of my mind, though, I just keep wondering if we keep dismissing Notre Dame when we shouldn't be. The team's 13-2 against the spread. Their average cover margin's 10 points a game. So they're beating expectations by 10 points each and every
11
game.
11 straight covers, too, by the way.
And on top of that, like, games that we kind of thought they were in trouble in. Like, they've risen to the occasion. The one hesitation that I have for the Irish on Monday is, is this the first game where the injuries really do limit them?
Oh, yeah. I think that's certainly a concern. Pound for pound, Ohio State's a better football team. And I think that's undeniable. However, I think if you dive into it a little bit, we did our rankings prior to the playoff. We were not high on Will Howard. Will Howard has played well, especially in the first two games. But he has shown a propensity to make mistakes. And Al Golden, the off-defensive coordinator for Notre Dame, is one of the better D coordinators out there. Can he scheme it up so that Will Howard makes mistakes? He threw a pick six against Penn State, right?
Yes, he did. Well, I mean, the against Texas, I mean, kind of a game-changing play was the pick that he threw.
So,
and he, by the way, he was, there's part of it, it's like, I didn't know whether to respect it, but man, there were a lot of throws where he was like letting it rip and it was like a foot away from being picked. And like the whole time I just sat there saying like, he's flirting with this. And then he finally threw one. Is Notre Dame going to be able to have the same type of defensive performance that Texas did?
Yeah, and that's certainly a concern. And I think my biggest worry from a Notre Dame standpoint is, well, we'll get to the offense here in a moment, but it's the defense. And they're awesome. However, you mentioned the injuries. Riley Mills, their best interior defensive lineman, he's injured. He's out. Notre Dame's best cornerback, Benjamin Morrison, injured. He's out.
Well,
however,
it's good Ohio State didn't really have that many good receivers, right?
Yeah, it's not like they have Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Egbuka, Carnell Tate, who is what, the number one overall recruit?
Yeah, the most forgotten like third receiver that would be a number one anywhere else.
I mean, he would be the number one for
I guess he did have the drop against Texas, so he's not a perfect receiver.
So, yeah, I get concerned for Notre Dame in this regard, where Michigan and Texas played kind of a two-shell high look and played some zone. Notre Dame wants to play man-to-man. That's what they do, and they're really good at it, right? And Greg McElroy talked to Pete Sampson of The Athletic, did kind of a Q&A with him, and he's like, what do Notre Dame players think if Al Golden walks in there, you know, with the game plan? He's like, all right, boys, best defense in the country, best secondary in the country. You guys are awesome. Not good enough to cover Ohio State, though. We're playing zone. It's like, what? Okay. So
when you really haven't done, by the way,
when you haven't done it
all year, really.
Right. It's like when you haven't done it. And so that's certainly a concern. Notre Dame's offense is a concern. Can they have success on a regular basis? I think the game plan, not the game plan, the path for Notre Dame is kind of the Georgia path, which is play really good defense, get a couple turnovers, and have a play on special teams. And I'm not saying that Notre Dame has to play a perfect game. They're only 8-point dogs. They're not 28-point dogs like Northern Illinois against Notre Dame. They're not. Michigan was a 19.5-point dog, and they beat Ohio State. They can get it done. I think it can happen. I don't think many people are giving them a shot to win this game outright, but they got to be buttoned up, man, and it'll be a challenge for sure. I haven't – the only bet that I've made that is kind of widely available is first half under 23.5.
Feel it out game.
I mean, you look at Notre Dame in their three playoff games, 17-3 against Indiana first half, 13-3 against Georgia, and really that was 6-3, but you get a late fumble, and fumbles and turnovers will hurt you if you're betting unders. And then you look at the Penn State game, it was 10-3 at halftime. And Notre Dame was getting completely shut out, you know, until that final drive when Steve Angeli stepped in. So I do think it'll be a feeling out type of situation, and Notre Dame's got to figure out ways, man, to make some explosive plays. I don't know where it's going to come from. Jeremiah Love, I was talking to a Notre Dame beat reporter just a little while ago before coming on the air. He felt like Jeremiah Love was feeling better with that knee injury, and he certainly played better than anticipated against Penn State, was more productive than I expected, but they need more from him, man. I'll say this. Everybody has been spending so much time, I think rightfully so, on what does Notre Dame's defense do against Ohio State's offense. Ohio State is the best defense in the country. Ohio State's defense is better than their offense.
I agree. Honestly,
that's scary, man.
What scares me is I'm not saying the Penn State win was fluky, because it wasn't. But what scares me is part of that was they were able to hit some explosive passing plays that I don't know if you're going to hit against Ohio State.
I agree. Look, I was at the game. We talked about it last Friday. I agree. I don't think it was fluky. I thought that second half offensive performance, I was like, where did this come from? Right? They utilized Aeneas Williams, their third string running back and third down back in the pass game. He was big. Jaden Greathouse, the first 100-yard receiver for Notre Dame this season.
Yep.
And one of them came. Now, he takes credit for it, and I'm not going to take it away from him. He juked the cornerback out of his shoes. Did he slip? Did he fall?
I think here's where he should take credit. I thought the corner just fell. I think the corner he slipped. But the move that he put on the safety.
Oh, that was nasty.
That was disgusting.
that was nasty, man.
I mean, he had the type of juke where, like, his whole body, like, sat down. Like, he just, like, he gave him, like, it wasn't even, like, the hezzy. It was, like, a drop move that was unreal. That's the one he should take credit for.
So, if Ohio State, and I think, lastly, is there a way that Notre Dame can lure Ryan Day and Chip Kelly into, hey, why don't you guys run the football? Hey, why don't you show us how tough you are? Run it between our D-line. Our D-line's weak. Our D-line's thin. If they can get them, and look, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson could absolutely go off. I'll say this, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton are better.
Yeah, I think the only way you can do that is you're going to need a shaky start from Will Howard. Because I was thinking about, even after Howard threw the pick, they still came back and were throwing the ball.
They should throw the ball.
Right, but like, you know, against Michigan, Howard throws the pick, and also he gets hit, so I don't know how much of that. And also it was a windy, quote-unquote, tough day to throw. But that was when they really started to clamp up. I mean, I do think that's interesting.
How do you see this thing playing out?
So my gut says like 24-17, where it's technically close, but I'm never really thinking that Notre Dame's going to win. You know the kind of game I'm talking about?
There's part of me that, you know, the pessimist in me as a Notre Dame fan who's seen the national championship with my own eyes 12 years ago, saying, oh my God, these are two different sports these teams are playing. But the fact that they beat Georgia, albeit without Carson Beck, they beat Penn State, it does give me like, I don't know, man.
Maybe well, there's also like, and I know,
this isn't TCU.
No.
23, when everyone was like, oh, they're pesky. And I could not bet enough on Georgia in that game.
No, I agree with you on that. And there's also this idea in my head. In the end, I don't know if Notre Dame has better big people, but they're probably going to match up against Ohio State as well as probably anyone else. I mean, Texas was – I thought Texas' defensive line matched up well, but I did not love Texas' offensive line, and we kind of saw, like, in the end, like, that was probably one of the differences. I also just kind of in the back of my head, I said this – I don't know if I said it to you, but I've been kind of pondering it. What if this Notre Dame team's like the 2001 Ohio State team, where – we're not exactly, like, they kind of have the vibe of Cinderella, but in reality, we know that they're not Cinderella. There's NFL players on this team. But they're the type of team that hasn't been all that impressive, and then they go up against, like, to me, that Miami team and this Ohio State team kind of profile similarly. Like, I do kind of wonder, like, what if we're just dismissing Notre Dame? Because Notre Dame went toe-to-toe with Penn State, and yes, I understand it's not apples to apples and it's not transitive property.
Penn State had the ball on the one-yard line against Ohio State. It was 20-13. Granted, the offense did not score a touchdown, but Penn State had the ball at the one-yard line against Ohio State and couldn't get into the end zone, a la Texas. Texas had the ball on the one-yard line. So, you know, Notre Dame has a shot. This is not... Even though I think the point spread was like 10.5, 12 years ago, this is not Notre Dame-Bama 2013. I do think this Notre Dame team has the capabilities. Now, look, everyone deals with injuries. Ohio State lost two offensive linemen.
Yep.
But Notre Dame, if they were full strength, I think they win this football game. But they're not full strength, and that's the nature of the beast. I will say this about the offensive line. Because this season's so damn long, Notre Dame lost their left tackle for the season, air quotes, and he's now starting at left tackle for the other hurt left tackle. So he's making his first start of the year, Charles Jagasaw. However, he was supposed to be the starter in August.
Fresh legs, baby. fresh legs.
By the way, I'm looking back real quickly. You want to take a guess? This is courtesy of BetMGM.
All right.
After Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, what do you think Notre Dame's odds were to win the national championship?
20-1.
100-1.
That'd be a nice ticket to have.
Yeah, you think?
That would be a nice ticket to have. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasselstein joins the program. Grizzlies and Spurs tonight. You can hear it on 92.9 FM ESPN. Let's talk to the man that will call the game live from San Antonio. He joins us next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. You can hear him tonight. Grizzlies Spurs 8:30 late start tonight as the game has been moved to ESPN. He joins us now. Eric, I wanted to start here. Jaren said after Wednesday night's win that they really needed that. And I found that striking because on the road trip, you had a split in two tough games. You win at Minneapolis and then you lose at Houston. But those were two, you know, essentially toss-up type games. Do you think the fact that they lost to Houston and that team is clearly, you know, to me it's like that is becoming a real rivalry. Like, do you think that had an impact and maybe made it feel worse than it was?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the fact that they have lost three to Houston and the first one was early in the season, yeah. So I tossed it out the window. Jaren didn't play. You know, it was one of those games where it got away from you. The new system, guys weren't comfortable, whatever it may be. But I think the way they lost the last two, where they felt like they could have won both, the one at home and the one on the road, you know, they, and the way they lost it, the physicality, the way Houston just kept coming, I think they needed, you know, they felt like they needed a boost. And in the game against San Antonio, you're talking about being down at halftime. It's seemingly not clicking for whatever reason. It's a young, gutty Spurs team that's got a guy in Victor Wembanyama who's, you know, a superstar in the making if he's not already one. You know, he's averaging 25, 10, and 4 blocks, and he's got 8 blocks at halftime. You're not finding any rhythm. You know, there's an energy in the building, like you're a target victory to come back and just get right back in the game the way they did in that early part of the third quarter. Yeah, I think that that was something they needed. They needed to be tested and come back, face that adversity, and come back and get a win like that. And the way they took care of the ball, I think that's the other thing. It showed that when this team takes care of the basketball, I'm sorry.
See, I see where your head's at.
No, I've got Moneyball on in the background. Well, you know, in some way, it was a way to kill time when you got to sit in the hotel room.
Hey,
for a
back
long time
back before. When your team was good.
Yeah, well, yeah, again, but that was what. We've had this discussion. I
know,
believe Bean did a heck of a job, but not a long term solution. Anyway, when you take care of the basketball and you take care of the window and you don't give second chance opportunities, and I thought they neutralized Wembanyama on the offensive end for him. He took like 10 threes, made three of them. Castle was terrific. He's going to be a great young player, and he's got a lot of upside there. But they didn't get involved in the chirping. Like Chris Paul was trying to go at like Luke Kennard and anybody else who would listen, chirping at the Grizzlies bench. I think, you know, that may have been the book. Like, hey, try to get under their skin. The Rockets have done it, and some other teams, the Kings have done it a little bit.
Warriors.
So, yeah, the Warriors have done it at times. So try to get under their skin, see if you can get them into doing what they don't do well, you know, which is try to go one-on-one rather than move the basketball. So I liked it. I liked what he said. I think you hit the midway point, you get a win. If you would have said before the season started at the 41-game mark, you'd be 26-15, and you know Marcus Smart would hardly have played. Ja would have missed, a handful of those games as well. And I think people have been like, "Yeah, we'll take it," you know, considering where you've been. So I think they feel like they could even be better. They could potentially be 28-13, you know, 29-12, and 30-11 would be a stretch. But you know, I always like when people go, "Oh, well, you let this game against the Bulls and this game against the Nets and this game against this team and that team." Well, yeah, you had other games too where you came back and won games you maybe shouldn't have as well.
Honestly, so, I felt like the Minnesota game was that way.
Yeah. Yeah, they you know, Minnesota, I that was a weird game. You know, we hadn't talked since then. I just watching that game, I kept looking at the scoreboard and going, how are they connected in this game the way the Wolves seemingly are playing, the energy there, and then down the stretch, the defense locked in, didn't give up a point the final 2 minutes. And, you know, that's where they want to start, is on the defensive end. They understand that. It's easier said than done. And, you know, for them, the thing to me that gets the Grizzlies sometimes in the most trouble, and it sounds bizarre, and I told somebody this the other night, and they're like, "What do you mean?" I said, when their opponent gets in the penalty, you know, early in a quarter or before the midway point, and you would think getting to the free throw line is a great thing. That's what you want to do. It's free throws. They're free points. That's why they're called free throws. Except for one thing. Everything stops.
Yeah.
There's no flow. There's no rhythm. The Grizzlies feed on that. Even when their opponent scores, they can rip it out of the net and go. When you're shooting free throws, you got guys lined up. You got guys, you know, in there. You wait to see if it's a make or a miss. Everybody can get reset. The Grizzlies are at their best when they're pushing advantage situations, when they're pushing the tempo, when they're getting you running, when you stop the game, guys get to catch their breath. I mean, I can't tell you how many times this year I look down on a court and you see one of the opponents doubled over, hands on their knees, gasping for air almost, and you're like, yeah, they're broken. They just broke them. They just broke one guy. They broke another guy. And the frustration that teams seemingly feel when, they cut into a 6-point lead or a 7-point lead and they get it to within two and they make a big basket. And the instinct is to, you know, kind of pound the chest a little bit going, here we go, we're coming for you. Except you turn around and you watch Desmond Bane dribbling 55 feet right by you, hanging in the air and gliding for a finger roll, or Ja Morant coming into the lane, kicking a pass to an open shooter that knocks down a three, and you go, uh-oh, you know, there you go. And you're kind of shell-shocked. And so it's interesting to watch. And so you'll see the teams that try to slow it down. I thought San Antonio was trying to do that a little bit at times last ball game on Wednesday. And so, it was a good way to get the win because the Spurs certainly were trying to, you know, I wouldn't say junk it up, but just get physical, make it a battle, make it a fight, where the Grizzlies are more of a, we want to run right past you and just beat you with our tempo, with our speed, and with our teamwork. And again, you look at a night where you score, what, 129?
Yeah, I think there's what, yeah. And what I think 75 of it, points. I think 75 of it was in the second half.
Yeah, but you have nobody over 21 points. It's another six person in double figures scoring night, and all of them are around 12, 13, 14. And it's, you start going, do the math. You know, Jay Huff comes off the bench. It's three big threes. You know, you look at Luke Kennard, the way he's been playing. Santi Aldama's back and fully healthy. And that just, the depth is going to get stronger, you know, with G.G. Jackson getting close to returning. When they bring him in, and you know, you feel for the guys that have helped get you there, whose minutes are going to diminish a little bit, but that's part of it. You know, that's part of being a pro. So it's fun, and it's fun to be a part of. You know, you see the camaraderie in the way things are going. And I honestly think, and I'm not trying to say this as a negative, I think, you know, watching Ja continue to get back to healthy and back into his groove and seeing how his teammates feed off of him when he's, you know, making plays, that's big too, because that hasn't been there for a while. You know, it wasn't there all of last year. He hasn't played this whole year. Now he's figuring things out with new faces and guys in different lineups that he hasn't played a lot with. You see Zach Edey starting to get better at understanding that when this guy elevates, don't drop your hands. You'll be able to go in and get a rebound if you hold your hands up longer and have to recover there. You are not going to be able to get your hands back up if you think he's going to shoot and put them down, because that ball's coming and you're not going to catch it in terms of odds. More than likely not going to catch it. And that's part of the learning curve. And so there's been mistakes with that. And then the frustration boils and everybody's talking, oh, yeah, they're good, but they don't beat good teams. And you're like, you know, I wouldn't say it that way either. So, they've still got some tests to you know, take coming up here with some – good squads coming up. Tonight's another one to beat a team twice in their building on the road. That's really hard to do. Coming home to face a Minnesota team on a national TV game that's going to be a midday game is going to be, you know, another test. And then, you see some non-playoff teams coming in, but the Pelicans are more like a playoff team now that they have guys back. But it's, you know, it's still a team that's outside of that. And then you've got a couple of tough road games. You go to New York, you go to Milwaukee before the All-Star break, you go to Phoenix and to face the Clippers the first time you're in Intuit Dome on the second out of a back-to-back. They're going to get tested, but I think they're answering those tests, and the confidence for them is believing in what they're doing and believing in their game.
All right. I want to give you credit. So we've been running your call of the greatest dunk that didn't count? I don't know. How are we framing it?
I think I said it was the greatest play in the history, that doesn't count.
Correct. And you also were prophetic in saying that this will be played on highlight shows
for all over.
All over again and again and again. And you were prophetic on that. I guess here's the real question. How are we just, like, I know there's the whole question, did it count? It's like, okay, obviously it didn't count. They blew the whistle, whatever. But it's like, it is this weird reality of, like, it's, we can't unsee it. You know what I mean?
No. And he didn't stop. Victor Wembanyama didn't stop. He wasn't going to let Ja just come in and, in his mind, get a highlight reel dunk even after the whistle. It wasn't going to happen in his building. Well, unfortunately, it happened, and it was even more impressive because he contested it. I'll be honest with you, and I love our crew here in San Antonio. I've been working with these guys that do the on-site engineering. We were having some technical issues. We were having internet issues. I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm glad it came out okay, because I was, there's very few times in my career I can remember being kind of like ticked off and just frustrated, not having nothing to do with basketball. And it wasn't our guy's fault per se. It was just things that were going on, and you're just like,
no worse feeling than seeing the Comrex doesn't connect.
Yeah, that was okay. Just the headsets,
yeah,
and the noise around you, and I was just like, and then you're losing by 12 at halftime, and you're like, Mike Wallace looked down at me, and he's like, oh yeah, tonight's not the night to jab him a little bit. Like, we have our barbs and have our fun, because it's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to tune into the radio and hopefully have fun, because we're trying to have fun, and we want you to have fun with us if you're listening. So I was... Michael even said after the game, he goes, yeah, we had angry Eric for a while. And I said, angry's not the right word, like frustrated. Like, it's nobody's trying. It's like anything else. Nobody's trying to mess up. And I remember early in my career, I'd get frustrated when mistakes would happen, and I'd be that, you know, overbearing, you know, supervisor. You know, no one's trying to make a mistake. It's like in any sport. No baseball player goes out to the field and goes, gee, I really hope I make an error on an easy ground ball. And then the pitcher's angry because you made the error on a play that you should make. The guy that knows he should make the play is the guy that made the error. So, I kind of grew up and changed that tune, but last night I was like feeling like that kid that was, you know, 31 living his dream, you know, at an awkward time for everybody, and, you know, things would go wrong and I would just start to get angry and frustrated. And I'm thankful it reeled back in and, you know, thankfully it came out okay.
All right, buddy. Good luck tonight.
My man, can I say one thing?
Yes, you may.
I think I'd like to, just on your show, first of all, thank all the fans for tuning in, but this has nothing to do with that per se. But, you know, we lost a legend in the broadcasting business to hear the passing of Bob Uecker, who was just not a good professional baseball player, but was so good at what he did. He was brilliant in terms of entertaining people, not only on television as Mr. Belvedere, but over the years, if you ever had a chance through satellite radio to listen to a Brewers broadcast. I mean, this dude was 90 years old, and I listened to him last year calling games, and he's on it, and you're just like, my gosh, this guy is so good. So to hear of his passing, you know, as someone in the industry, I hope people understand what a treasure he was for sports, the game of baseball, just entertainment in general, and, you know, his legendary role as Harry Doyle in Major League will live forever. So I didn't really have a chance to talk about that in our game, but I'm glad that we could say it here because that's a guy that I had a lot of respect for and looked up to a great deal throughout my career.
Yeah, I spent a decent amount of time yesterday just going through YouTube, like whether it be old calls. One of the more underrated ones was when he was on Letterman, and Letterman was asking about his career, and he said, yeah, you know, he was going through the teams. He's like, the Braves, I even played for the Braves twice. They forgot that I was so bad the first time that they had to confirm it the second time.
Yeah, that was the funny thing. And, you know, I remember his Miller Lite days, his Miller Lite commercials, where he's like, yeah, I must be in the front row. I must be in the, you know, they're moving me down, because he's like, Mr. Uecker, we have your seats. And they put him in the upper deck.
The Uecker seats.
Yeah, he's talking about how bad he was as a baseball player, and he's just screaming, he missed the tag, he missed the tag. And that's kind of where he burst on through those commercials. And then just to, you know, to be an actor after being an athlete and then a play-by-play guy, yeah, it's a pretty impressive resume, to say the least.
Underrated part, did you know that he worked on a handshake deal until his SAG health insurance was stopped being covered, and so then they had to formalize. He had to sign a contract with the Brewers. This is like 2014. He worked like 40-something years without a contract. Like, could you imagine?
No, and his calls of, you know, a home run was get up, get out of here. I mean, they're all over that stadium. We've had a chance to see those, and, you know, he's just a legend. So I know you're up against it, but I'm glad I had a chance to pay homage to a great one.
Absolutely, my man. Appreciate you.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, for days, don't tell the story, tell your story. We had another SpaceX rocket launch today. Elon Musk on X, the Everything app, it is all happening on X, shared the video of the SpaceX rocket blowing up 9 minutes into launch. He tweeted the following: success is uncertain, but entertainment is guaranteed. No one died, everyone. It was an unmanned launch. It was like the scene in Succession when Roland, or what's Kieran Culkin's name? He watches the rocket launch blow up on his phone. Put it down. All right, my man. The next time we'll hear the show will be Tuesday, so you and I will be talking early. But hey, best of luck to the Irish, my man.
Thank you, brother. First national title since 1988.
Sweet Lou, is he going to be there?
See you, man.
All right, that is Tim Murray. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, For Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.